like to acknowledge my co-author, Laura Schmidt, who's also at the Institute for Health Policy Studies at UCSF, and who is the principal investigator of the study that provided the data for this paper. The talk today is called Lost and Found on the Effects of Failure to Include Hard-to-Reach Respondents in Public Health Research. Most studies of the hard-to-find look at the characteristics and focus on the people who were hard-to-find. We focus more on the research process, as you will see. We're going to be looking at the problems of attrition bias and low response rates in hard-to-reach populations. Differential attrition, or non-random loss of a study's respondents, and low response rates can bias a study's findings in a number of ways. They can change the sample composition so it no longer represents the study population, lead to inaccurate estimates, and also reduce power to detect effects. Increasing response rates may not, in fact, reduce bias if care is not taken to retain hard-to-reach and costly-to-find respondents and other respondents. So who are the hard-to-reach? Mostly they're defined by their characteristics. And so by reputation, they are people with low incomes, drug users, young people, undocumented immigrants, criminals, hidden populations, the homeless, the unstably housed, people with high residential mobility. But there really isn't a coherent standard for defining who is hard to reach or for developing tracking protocols to find them. So we were curious about whether or not a study's respondents who were empirically hard to reach, that is, those who were found only after using extended tracking efforts, different from other respondents. And we wanted to know what are the effects of extended tracking effort on overall response rates and rates in subgroups, and whether or not excluding these respondents might bias a study's findings. The data source is a welfare client longitudinal study, the WCLS, which is a survey of cash aid recipients in a Northern California county. The county provides cash aid via two programs. One is TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or the Federal Welfare Program for Adults Raising Minor Children, and a local general assistance program for childless adults who basically can't qualify for TANF. They were first interviewed when they came into the welfare offices to apply for aid. They were then sampled into the cohort when they qualified for aid and started receiving aid payments. And we have an oversample of heavy drinkers and drug users in order to have a large enough pool for meaningful analysis. The WCLS used extensive follow-up procedures to track people over 5 years. I'll talk about that in a minute. This study looks at the women from the WCLS, all 498 of them. We use data from the baseline survey, which was done in 2001, and we look at their participation status in 2002. So what do I mean by extended follow-up efforts? We had a fieldwork agency and scientific staff, including a fellow who was trained as a private investigator, and he was known as the secret weapon, who would actually stake out people's houses and places he thought they might come, sometimes for 5 hours or days at a time, to try to find them. This is unusual in survey research. We used multiple methods to find them. Everyone shared files, sometimes working on these files at the same time. Cases stayed open for the whole year until the next wave of data collection. So some people got up to 12 letters, 57 telephone calls, and 28 field visits before either they were found or we gave up. And they got cash incentives to participate. So we identified the hard-to-reach respondents by looking at the tracker's field notes so that we could actually determine who was found using extensive tracking efforts. We coded and quantified those, and then we compared hard-to-reach respondents to other continuing respondents using baseline survey data, and we looked at response rates. We then did a non-response simulation, and we did this based on a study that had been published last year using the applicant sample of women from the WCLS, and I'll talk about that more in a minute. We reanalyzed that using the full baseline cohort of 498 respondents. We then eliminated everyone who was lost to follow-up, did a reanalysis, and then we further eliminated everyone who was hard to find. We used criteria from the survey research literature and public health literature, and also we interviewed a number of people at survey research centers across the country. And we came up with 14 phone calls or more was hard to reach, or 5 letters, or 3 or more, more than 3 residential visits, 1 or more non-residential visits, and this could be to a check cashing place, a street corner, a jail, any place we thought we'd find them, a soup kitchen. If the search remained open for more than 60 days, or if the contract agency just gave up and handed the file back to the scientific staff. So at 0 months, at baseline, we had 498 women. 339 of those were found using standard effort, what we called standard effort. 100 were found using extended effort, those were the hard to reach, and 59 were lost. So the weighted response rates, we actually achieved an 89% response rate at 1 year. We estimate that had we not used extended effort, we would have had a 71% response rate. This is pretty much the same over subgroups, except if you go down to the third one from the bottom, substance-dependent women, we did manage to get 81% of them, but we think that without the extended effort, we would have only reached 48% of those women. And in fact, when we compared hard-to-reach and easily found respondents, we only found a difference in substance dependence. There was no significant difference in anything else that we tested, a number of sociodemographic, health, and behavioral variables. Our non-response simulation was based on a published study by Landschmidt and Wiley looking at the applicants to TANF and GA in this county. They found there was a more violent victimization among the women of GA, and that the women of GA have even more need for violence prevention services than do women on TANF, and most programs are focused on those. We used 498, as again, women at baseline. So these are the results. These 8 variables on the side are summary variables used by Lown. She gave us her coding, so we just used them. The ones that you see in pink, she found that women of GA were significantly more likely to experience. She didn't find results in the ones in white. When we reanalyzed this using the full baseline cohort, we found significant differences in odds for every category of violence. When we then excluded the women who were lost to follow-up, in the second column is the women who were found, 439 of them, we found significant differences in all but one category, and the odds ratios got a little bit smaller, but except for the penultimate one, they were pretty much the same. However, when we excluded the women who were hard to reach from our analysis, the odds ratios in the most case became much smaller, the results were downwardly biased, and we found evidence in only 2 of the 8 categories of violence and none in partner violence at all. So we find that the extended effort substantially increased response rates in subgroups and in the whole sample, that there was little difference between the hard-to-reach women and others at baseline. And substance dependence is an example of a variable that is possibly related both to an increased propensity to experience violence and a decreased propensity to be found. What happened was that the prevalence of violence increased among the TANF women as we reduced the sample, and decreased among the GA women as we reduced the sample entirely unexpectedly, and it reduced the odds ratios and downwardly biased the results. So we think that excluding the hard-to-reach women would have reduced evidence that the women of GA experience more violence and have even a greater need for violence prevention services than the women of TANF. So we think that including the hard-to-reach respondents can increase response rates and reduce the risk of attrition bias. We also think that these extended efforts, which were very expensive and very time-consuming, were really worth the considerable increase in time and money. Also, this was a relatively homogeneous sample. I mean, there was diversity in the sample, but it was all people on cash aid in a very affluent county in California. So we think that the effect might be even greater in general population studies, where the differences between hard-to-reach respondents and easily found respondents may or may not be greater. And we conclude that attaining high response rates should be a high priority for public health researchers and their funders, because the WCLS, of course, had funders willing to pay for these very expensive follow-up efforts. We used baseline survey data and participation status at 12 months. We wanted to do this because we wanted to include women who were lost to follow-up in our analysis. We thought maybe we'd be able to determine at the outset who might be hard to reach at 12 months, but as you saw, we didn't find very much difference. And baseline variables may change over time as well. Our study population included many people who are reputedly hard to reach, so we were able to get a good look at those. However, it was women in one California county. There is a serious limitation in the ability to generalize these results to other populations. The other thing that was different about this study was the access to the field notes. When these field notes were made, they were not collected as data. The researchers had no idea anybody was going to be looking at these. They didn't attempt to do things in any particular order, so we couldn't say, well, this many phone calls made a difference and this many. Everything was happening all at the same time by sometimes three trackers. So while we lost some precision, they were also working documents. We got a real-life look at what people do, and we were able to identify respondents by virtue of how hard it was to find them rather than by their characteristics. We are very grateful to Anne Lown, who is the principal author of the original study that we based our simulation on, for giving us her variable codes and for other contributions, to the study team at WCLS, to the writing seminar at IHPS, because this is in review at AJPH for a second time, to the alcohol research group where the WCLS is housed, and I'm very grateful to a number of people at Berkeley who were involved with this when I started this research as a dissertation project. Thank you.